Cycle Street at 7 San Joaquin Valley Project by Ralph Jester at Pioneer Village on October 30th, 1977 at 4 p.m. Okay, Mr. Anthony, I think you wanted to talk about early black history in Bakersfield.
Yes, Ralph, I guess we'll both call each other Ralph here. And I think probably the best thing for me to do is paraphrase an article that was in the Heritage of Kern regarding one of the first black families in Kern County. As far as I know at this particular point, William Henry Pinckney Pioneer was the first.
Spell the last name.
Okay, the spelling is P-I-N-C-K-N-E-Y. Many times it's spelled, I think, even out at Pioneer Village, P-I-N-K-N-E-Y, so the C was left out. But William Pinckney was born near Seneca City, South Carolina, on December 14th in 1872. And his father, David Pinckney, and his mother's maiden name was Elidia Reese. I think they came with one of the first boxcars, load of blacks to Chattanooga, Tennessee, where they met more families than on coming to California to better themselves. And the Pinckney families and others settled in Bakersfield. The rest went to Los Angeles, Fresno, Tulare, Stockton, various other points in the San Joaquin Valley. And it's not generally known that cotton raising began around Bakersfield in 1884, but Carr and Hagen, who were land developers, brought in the black people from through agents in the east, where they planted three sections between Weibel Road and Kern Island Road. They even brought around sacks of flour, dropped them at the doorsteps, as well as making arrangements for dropping off meat so that the laborers in the field had something to live on while they were working. However, so many did run away and would not work the cotton, and it was abandoned after a year, and beets were planted in their place. They were doing cotton experiments at that time. Although Pinckney said that, just remembering some of the history, that the city folks wasn't as good as the rural folks or the southern folks, because they didn't want to do the work in the fields.
This is the city black.
Yeah, the blacks, right. And the city blacks versus
the rural
blacks. And when young Pinckney arrived in Bakersfield, the city limits on the south was at 14th Street. And he remembered when it was extended first to 4th Street and then to Brundage Lane. In the block where the present Elks Club building stands, there was nothing but a jungle of willows where hobos hung out and camped. And at the west of the present City Hall between I and H Street, there was a large blackberry patch owned by D. Weber. The Messina Hotel later stood on a part of this ground at the southwest corner of I and Truxton Street. Pinckney then purchased a small residence at 812 H Street in 1900, at which time a water ditch ran down 8th Street in front of his house. And in the next block north, location of New St. Francis Church, there was an open area where families camped out during the visits to Bakersfield until as late as 1902. And this was in the Lowell addition, named to Wilmer Lowell. In fact, there's a park now on 4th and P Street called Lowell Park. In 1885, Pinckney was 13, and he worked as a houseboy for Dr. L.S. Rogers at his home located 18th and H Street. Now, where the site was Judd's. Now, I don't think Judd's exists. I think Judd's is there still a Judd's? I'm not on 18th and H. I think Judd's is out now, too.
I'm not familiar with the name.
And it seemed like I can recall, okay, Judd's, and then it was Wiles. And It may be still there. I'll have to.
There's a building there.
Yeah, 18th and H. Uh-huh. I can't quite. That's probably one thing that we can double check on. And in 1877 to 88, Pinckney worked near Tehachapi handling cattle, and then came down to work for 2 years as a stockman for Brown's Dairy. According to Pinckney in the article, it was in 1890 or 1891 that R.E. Houghton brought the first Holstein cattle into the Bakersfield area. He passed them about where Kern Valley Packing Plant is today, on Kern Island Road, south of Bakersfield, on his Berkshire Ranch. And I think that's called now, it's still Kern Valley, and it is on South H. Yeah, it's still located out there, because down the street further is another packing plant from a family that's been here a long time. All of a sudden my mind goes blank.
That's not the Rudnick.
Rudnick, right. Okay. The Rudnick plant, right. Now, he said the Big Bakersfield, he remembers vividly the Big Bakersfield fire of 1889, and it was one of and also the flood of 1893. And I've heard people talk about the fire and the flood back in those times, where they said they had the, at that time downtown, to get around you rode trolley cars. And I was shocked to find that they had trolley cars in Bakersfield. He remembered a man named Barnhart who planted many of the umbrella and palm trees that still grow around the city. He remembered when the Valley Road came into Bakersfield, and Pinckney played a tenor trombone in the black band which was present on that occasion of the tree planting, and it was known as the Kern Valley Band. Professor White was its leader. Henry Simpson, the gardener, also played with them later. This group disbanded about 1905, so I guess we can say that was the first black band in Kern County, I would assume, from what I know. And thinking back further, Pinckney believed the first show in Bakersfield was the Nickelodeon, located on the northwest corner of Chester Avenue and 17th. The admission price was 5 cents.
But is there a date for that? Does he know when that was located there?
Let's see. No, it didn't mention a date, but he said the pictures did not move, but were slides that were pushed in and out of a projector. And the skating rink was next erected on this property, and after it, the Beale Memorial Library. So maybe we can go back and check when the Beale Memorial Library was built, then the skating rink, and then find out about the Nickelodeon Theater. I also remember old timers talking about that particular area, China. It was a little place on AL and 20th Street. And I think it was mentioned in Shotguns on Sunday.
Well, that should be the new China Cafe. Or was that it?
Let me see. I think now it's just a parking lot for Brock's.
Okay.
Yeah.
The new China Cafe would be across the
across
street.
Across the street, yeah.
The red brick building.
Right, because I think it's a couple of them. And Wong's is near there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also, according to Pinckney, there was a three-story grand hotel that stood on the northwest corner of 20th and Chester. And when Sheriff John Kelly closed up the place stud poker gambling in the Arlington Hotel and other places, the Arlington stood on the southeast corner of 19th Street and Chester Avenue and burned down in the big fire of 1889 and then rebuilt it in 1890. I think Shotguns on Sundays would also verify that the gambling element threatened to kill Kelly for spoiling their business. And Kelly used to live near Pinckney and often walked home with him after work until Kelly chanced to mention that they were out to kill him. And after that, the sheriff walked home alone. Kelly later became wealthy after the discovery of the Kelly Rand Mine in Randsburg area. Now, Also, according to Pinckney in the article, August Kretzmer made the iron chains that surrounded the grounds of the old city hall in its foundry, while he, Pinckney, made the mortar for the fence at the same location. He said, in those days, men got 75 cents to a dollar per day for driving teams of 2 to 4 horses or mules. They received a dollar and a quarter to a dollar and a half per day when they drove a team of 8 to 10 animals with a jerk line. At that time, Miller was said to have had 100,000 hogs in the county. And in Pinckney's youth, Railroad Street, later Truxton Avenue, was the main stock trail through Bakersfield. When cattle and sheep were driven in from the west to be loaded on the railroad in East Bakersfield, the dust was something terrific. To keep it down somewhere, straws were thrown on the road, but it didn't help too much. Now, I also recall a family, a lady, she's deceased now, but this was about the 77, about 3 years ago, and talking with her, she remembered the trails that came down from where Kern General Hospital is, where they had to ride a wagon. It took them all day to ride a wagon. I think she said half a day to ride a wagon from where Kern Medical Center is to where she lived on Pacheco Road. And they rode in horses and buggies like that, and they used to go to town, which was East Bakersfield, and shop and everything. When the cowboys from T-Hone, Miller, and Lux, and George Coffee outfits came into town on payday, they would ride in groups of 15 or 20. The Red Lights District ran 24 hours a day. Can you imagine that? And no matter what time these men reached town, they were always sure of a good time, whether it was 2 or 6 o'clock in the morning. They would often race up and down the streets, lassoing chairs off the sidewalks. I don't know if they had sidewalks. That must have been boardwalks.
Is there a location given for that, the Red Light District was at that time?
Let's see. They didn't give it, but you know, and I'm going to take a guess, the area between that was downtown, bordered by L to 19th, going north of the 18th, and then 19th, I'd say between 19th and Railroad, Truxton, if I remember properly. I'm sort of thinking about Shotguns on Sunday and what some of the other people had told me that I have talked with. And all they said was town, and I guess at that time, town was a red light district because this was a pretty interesting place and sort of dangerous still. Last of the dangerous cowboys lived here, for his, in that, which was verified through Shotguns on Sunday. And I understand that book was held up from printing, and the guy that was trying to write it got run out of town on several occasions and had to wait before he wrote it. Now, this is something, a new twist. Pinckney also remembered when English remittance men came into the Rosedale area. The Southern Hotel management required them to make a deposit before having a party to be sure of getting payment for damaged furniture and other equipment. And he said those were really the wild times. So I imagine if they stayed open all night and guys rode in on their horses, ready to party, it didn't matter. In 1899, Pinckney married a widow, Mrs. Amanda Randolph, and part of the Randolph family is still here in Bakersfield. I'm presently trying to make contact with him. And from 1916 to 1945, when he retired, he worked for the City of Bakersfield Street Department as a grader man. And for a number of years, he owned a small ranch in the mountains above Lorraine, where he kept a few head of horses and cattle. His last years were spent mostly between there and his home in Bakersfield, where he resided with his stepdaughter, Hinda Randolph, until his death in March of 1954. And in the March of 1954, I started high school in 1954 in June. Now, I do know some of the Randolph family. And then there's some other families that came shortly after the Pinckneys that I know of. Maybe we can get into later on, Ralph.
Okay. Go back and get a few details. It said the Blacks arrived in 1884 for the Hagen and Carr's cotton farms. Mm-hmm. How many came at that time?
Well, it said 20 carloads came to California that he knew of. I don't think there was any others around at that time because this was shortly after freedom was declared for blacks. And many of the blacks had left the South going to the cities to find employment. And when they started the transferring former slaves and their sibling from the rural area where there was plantations, etc., and from, say, Chicago, the urban areas. These were really about the times that blacks started coming in horse, but there is history of black cowboys. Now, that goes back even further. That goes back, I think, in the latter 1700s. And I was trying to think Beckwith, William Beckwith, Beckwith's Pass. Now, I don't know if he got near Kern Valley or Kern County, per se, but he was known for his tremendous ability of cattle drives, particularly in California and Arizona. So, but it's Beckwith Pass. I can't think of his first name right now. Beckworth, if I'm remembering correctly. And there was one more, like in, okay, we'll go back to, let's see, would this be the 1600s? And it may be in the 1800s also, where the governor of California was Pio Pico. He was black and Mexican heritage. So we can really say the first black governor of California was in 1815, something like that. I can't quite...
I think he was governor in the 1840s.
When okay.
The Americans managed to take it.
Right.
In the war.
And now that's the farthest that I can go at this particular point. Now, Walter and Mary Lou Massey, some of the people I've talked to. Then there's Mrs. Davis, who I hope to get here. She's been here over 52 years. And then Bessie Owens, where the school was named after, elementary school, Bessie Owens. And then there was the Lowry family, who lived across the street in the same area of the Pinckneys. Where Pearlie Mae Winters Lowry, she was an opera singer. So, let's see if you know. The Abernathy family, and let's see, there's a, I want to say Scott, it may be Scott. They live somewhere on 22nd Street. They've been here, a part of the families that's been here a long time. And also a Railsback family that I'll have to try to recontact. Now these people are, I would say, in their 70s or 80s now.
Have they mentioned anything about what their reception was in Kern County when they got here?
Well, I'll tell you what I do recall, some saying that when they did come to the cotton fields at this particular time where a lot of the flight came from the South, the poor whites had moved out in the area, and that they discriminated against the blacks in the cotton fields then. I guess it's a matter of economics, what you can think of. But I think if it was always, they had to always play an inferior role. Okay, but there's one family, and I still think it's part of the Lowry family. They owned a business, a furniture store downtown. And then there was the Houston family. One man was a barber. And not to sound negative, but no, I shouldn't say any of his hearsay, that he didn't want to be known to be black. And so there are several families that passed for white while they were here. So I don't want to get off into that unless I have time to, you know, start doing some research. Just keep that as hearsay. But all that can be researched, I assume.
Did any of them mention what the rate of pay was in the fields at that time?
Okay, now the only thing I can allude to is what we were, you know, kind of mentioned earlier. If it's 75 cents a day for driving a mule, team of mules or horses, gosh, I can't imagine what it was in those days for picking cotton. Now, like what he did mention, Pinckney had mentioned himself, is that he thought it was a wonderful arrangement since meat was furnished, as well as their housing, and they had the use of the farm animals. And he thought it was good of the folks to bring by flour and drop them at the doorstep. And it cost them nothing. So that was the only thing that he had mentioned. So it may have been a form of sharecropping just for a living. I don't know if they had anything extra. But that would be very interesting to find out.
I understood that there was considerable backlash among the white laborers for this,
the cotton and different job. Well, that's why I say the only thing I can allude to is where it's sort of a comical remark today when you start talking about the early days, and that the blacks felt that it was a discrimination then, even in the labor market, in the cotton fields. And so it just transferred on. As you know, Ralph, downtown itself really started hiring blacks a little bit more right to about 59 or 60. And that's also the time when blacks started getting into the oil field. Now, when I say that, a lot of people say, well, there was one, you know, and all that. I'm not talking about the super one or the exceptional one. I'm talking about as far as being open to blacks that weren't known, where before a black could be hired, someone had to know him personally. You couldn't just walk in and get a job unless there was a great need or so. But there was a competition as far as the labor market was, and there was discrimination against the blacks regardless of whether they could do the job or not. But some history shows that, well, when things were wide open, if a person had ability to do it, then they could succeed. But after they succeeded and there was more control measures going, well, then they were forced out. Business is stolen. You know, there's a lot of claim jumping going on in the oil industry. Water controls, you know, all of our, even some of the problems we have today, some sort of mix and night type happenings, if I may use that term. Now, all that's conjecture. It's not fully on fact, it's hearsay until that could, you know, need to be searched out.
Can we talk a bit, let me see. It's my understanding that the Klan was fairly active in Bakersfield in the 1920s. Do you have any information on that?
Okay. I'll take off from the latest incident that happened in Taft about a year, 2 years ago, when black students were run out of Taft due to some of the roughs in town, whatever they want to say it. But it is true. From what I have, from my own experience in going to a cafe, and this was about in 1952, and I think it was in 52, well, I'll say between 52 and 54, they did have a sign on one of the restaurants on Union Avenue. It's a little cafe, and I believe it was between California and 4th Street. And they did say, and I think some of these people that I'm talking about could verify it themselves. Now, I'm going by what they told me, that there was a sign at the end of, I guess, the Bakersfield city limits then, between here and L.A., that they didn't want blacks, Jews, and other colors or something. Moving into town. Now, this is what I had, you know, I understood. There's some still say, and maybe the FBI and CIA would know this, but I doubt they get up the information, that there's still organized Klan groups that exist in Taft right now. And I had heard, it's not as valid as the one from Taft, that there may, some of them may exist in Oildale. But that's supposed to be today. But then it was open then because I think Marian Anderson came into Bakersfield in 1920. I can't remember the years. I better back off of that. I don't know. But she couldn't get a hotel in Taft. And I think she had to come to Bakersfield. And a lot of the carporters then, they had special places they had to go through when they got off working on the trains. And they had porterhouses, I call them porterhouses, set up to where they knew they could go to be safe and get food, board, care. Because, you know, at that time, I remember this would have to be, now I got here in Bakersfield in 48, right to the cotton fields. It had to be in 50, around 50, because I was elementary age and may have just began junior high, which would be 52. I remember talking to a man that had his degree in engineering, and he couldn't get a job. And he said it was because, you know, they hadn't opened the field up for blacks at that time. And the only job that he could get would be a porter's job, and he didn't want that, so he'd rather work in the fields than to have to waste his talent that way. And a lot of the blacks that did have education then were forced to work in jobs that were considered for colors, porter jobs, service jobs, maintenance.
Let's use that as a comparison. How much were you paid in the fields in 48?
Okay, in 48, I think we worked then primarily for several contractors. Joe B. Johnson contracting. Yes, in fact, they called him King Cotton. He was the largest labor contractor. And I think at that time, in 40s, we were getting from $2.50 to $3, or $2.50 to $3 a hundred, 100 pounds of cotton. And if, or you can say 2 to 3 cents per pound, would that be per 10 pounds?
Yeah.
I always thought about it in hundreds, $2 to $3 a hundred for 100 pounds of cotton.
3 cents a pound.
Yeah, 3 cents a pound, there we go. And according to the cost of living, that was good. And picking potatoes used to get from $5 to $8 sack, or $5 to $8 a hundred. I mean, $5 to $8 a hundred. And see, I had became very proficient in picking cotton and potatoes. I picked over 500 pounds of cotton. The average person would pick 250 to 500 sacks of potatoes. The average person would pick again about 250. But that was because my little personal challenge to it. No brag, just fact.